Whether by luck or accident, I cannot say, but I found my way to the library a full 20 minutes earlier than I had been commanded to attend. It was not a problem. What better place to kill time than a library? And for me, what better way to get to know someone than through their choice and treatment of books? Unlike the other rooms, the library was made of wood. There were floorboards underfoot, shutters at the tall windows, the walls were lined with solid oak shelves. It was a high room, much longer than it was wide. On one side, 5 arched windows reached from ceiling almost to floor. At their base, window seats had been installed. Facing them were 5 similarly shaped mirrors, positioned to reflect the view outside, but tonight echoing the carved panels of the shutters. The bookshelves extended from the walls into the rooms, forming bays. In each recess, an amber-shaded lamp was placed on a small table. Apart from the fire at the far end of the room, this was the only lighting, and it created soft, warm pools of illumination at the edge of which rows of books melted into darkness. Slowly I made my way down the centre of the room, taking a look into the bays on my right and left. After my first glances, I found myself nodding. It was a proper, well-maintained library. Categorized, alphabetized, and clean, it was just as I would have done it myself. In the final bay on the right, one particular set of shelves stood out even from some distance. Instead of the mellow, predominantly brown stripes that were the spines of the older books, this stack showed the silvery blues, sage greens, and pink beiges of more recent decades. They were the only modern books in the room. Miss Winter's own works. I selected a copy of Miss Winter's most recent book. On page 1, an elderly nun arrives at a small house in the back streets of an unnamed town that seems to be in Italy. She is shown into a room where a pompous young man, who we take to be English or American, greets her in some surprise. I turned the page. The first paragraphs had drawn me in, and without meaning to, I began to read in earnest. The young man does not at first appreciate what the reader already understands, that his visitor has come on a grave mission, one that will alter his life in ways he cannot be expected to foresee. She begins her explanation and bears it patiently. I turned the page. I had forgotten the library, forgotten Miss Winter, forgotten myself, when he treats her with the levity of indulged youth. And then something penetrated through my reading and drew me out of the book. A prickling sensation at the back of the neck. Someone was watching me. Not only that, but they had been watching me for some time. Needing a moment to recover myself, I turned the page, continuing the pretense of reading. "You can't fool me!" Imperious, declamatory, magisterial. There was nothing to be done but turn and face her. Vida Winter's appearance was not calculated for concealment. She was an ancient queen, sorceress, or goddess. Her stiff figure rose regally out of a profusion of fat purple and red cushions. Draped around her shoulders, the folds of the turquoise and green cloth that cloaked her body did not soften the rigidity of her frame. Her bright copper hair had been arranged into an elaborate confection of twists, curls, and coils. Her face, as intricately lined as a map, was powdered white and finished with bold scarlet lipstick. In her lap, her hands were a cluster of rubies, emeralds, and white bony knuckles. Only her nails, unvarnished, cut short and square like my own, struck an incongruous note.